Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 518. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamia. What's up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Well, I was telling you about some of our travels. I will condense that story down for the pod. Jeremy and I did indeed watch Absolute Intense Wrestling's Absolution 14. I tweeted about the first half, and then when we were watching it the next day, I did not tweet nearly as much about it from the Stunt Granny account. But needless to say, we just did not get time to record the podcast. That one will be coming later tomorrow, hopefully. So there's that to get things off the ground. And, you know, I guess in other wrestling news there is a lot. But I'm going to go with Brock Lesnar losing to Seth Rollins to lead things off, because that was one that, quite frankly, there are a couple of things, I guess, intertwined with this happening. I think Seth definitely, well, at least should get some legitimacy for his title reigns. Now, having beaten Brock Lesnar twice, you know, there's something to that. Brock Lesnar has not lost a whole lot of matches in, you know, the last 5 years that he's been in the WWE.
Right. No, he has not. He's not. Yes, as you said, he's lost to Seth twice now, and this one was the match. This was, you know, Seth Rollins getting a full, you know, the full Brock Lesnar experience, a decent length match that was, you know, done really well. Brock was definitely, you know, at the top of his game. I don't know why I stumbled over that. Brock was definitely came in at the top of his game. He was, you know, Brock must just like Seth, or Paul Heyman must really like Seth, because, you know, Brock doesn't do what he did for Seth on Sunday for really anyone.
Brock has had good matches with other people, but yeah, I mean, he chose not to lose to AJ Styles, I'm assuming, it just wasn't fitting the storyline. Finn Balor didn't get it done. And hell, even Roman Reigns is a guy that, that was part of the problem with his push, is that he never ended up getting the big wins over Lesnar that he needed. Honestly, so it was really shocking to me to see Seth Rollins get this one. Like, that was, I guess it's one of those things that is not really lost on me, and yeah, Seth kind of needed that, but I mean, the WWE, you know, it was another one where the WWE kind of screwed themselves after his win. You know, they haven't always done a good job booking the champions. Like, they love to, they can build someone up, but they have a terrible job maintaining people, it seems.
That's a very good point.
And, at least champions,
you know,
I should say.
Time will tell whether they're able to, you know, do it right this time, especially as it regards to, you know, not just how Seth Rollins is portrayed and his creative, just focusing purely on him, but also his opponents. You know, he needs a good, you know, line of opponents to work with. You know, they pretty much put him in a situation where he had to win on Sunday. I mean, to take the two beatings he took and not come back to win would have just been the end of him as a babyface, pretty much. So, I mean, it really isn't that surprising that he won the match. That he won the match so emphatically, and you know, there was nothing. I mean, there were no low blows. There was no weapons. There was nothing. You know, there was nothing that really. There's no banana, you know, proverbial banana peel that Brock's, you know, slipped on.
Oh, right.
You know, Seth just beat him. It took three curb stomps, but Seth did. You know, Seth beat him in the end, clean in the middle. They've got Seth. You know, heated back up. You know, they didn't blow things on Monday. You know, that stuff. What they did with Seth and AJ Styles was good. The additions of Ricochet and Braun Strowman in the mix, leads to some interesting possibilities. You know, if the match ends up being, if it does end up being, you know, Seth versus Braun, I think, you know, that's a good match for Seth right there. For Seth to have to go from Brock to Braun is, you know, it's done, you know, from a purely, you know, storyline standpoint, it's you know, almost just as hard of a match for him. They can tell the story, you know, tell a very similar story. Yeah, so you know, it's definitely better than, you know, what they were start. I guess Seth's start title reign started off with AJ Styles, which was fine.
Oh, and,
but
right.
Then three pay per views with Baron Corbin will kill anybody.
that did him zero favors, and you know, at this point. I feel like Baron Corbin has had a somewhat extended stay off of TV.
Yes, he has. He will be back in the King of the Ring tournament, though. But you know, he's one of 16 bodies. I don't think he's being primed to win it because he's already had his, you know, run at the top as a challenger and was defeated soundly. On every occasion,
by the same opponent. You know, it would be one thing if you know, it wasn't a babyface Seth Rollins as the champion. You know, if they had somehow had a new babyface champion, I could maybe see Baron Corbin getting another crack at things, only to still lose, of course. But.
Right.
I could see him, but I don't see them doing Corbin versus Rollins Part 4 this quickly. No.
I totally agree with you. No, I do not see that coming. So yeah, no. They've got Seth in a good position right now. You know, Brock did his job. Seth. You know, Seth rose to the occasion himself. No, it's you know, as far as resets go, it was a good one.
Well, you know, and I guess there's kind of two points that I'd like to tangent off of this one. The one being, I was amused that I read on, I believe it was Cage Side Seats, about them being mad about Seth Rollins winning the match because of the level of the beatings that he's taken. And that's one of those things that, to me, there's a huge difference in how injury is approached in the WWE and New Japan. And I guess just because I've been watching way more of the G1 this year, you see where injuries actually play into matches in Japan.
I don't know about that right now. How far are you into the G1?
Well, I have watched part of the final.
Okay. So, Ibushi just blatantly, alternating, you know, when to decide when to sell the leg and when not to sell the leg. That didn't bother you at all?
Oh, no, I have not seen that match.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I've only watched the first. I watched the Lance Archer match. Yeah, because he took on Evil and, I'm trying to think of Kenta's match.
Yeah, I mean, but it's, you know what, it's just a thing in these...
And to me, selling an injury in a match is different than selling something consistently. Like, in the WWE, to me, even if, I guess, he forgot to in that time, like, the WWE has always had people get injured, but then, you know, just to make it more, I guess they want to make it more heroic that they made the comeback to win. And I don't feel like they play that card nearly as much. Like, I feel like people lose because of their injuries far more often than the WWE, where, as we were just talking about with Rollins, like, and you even said it, he wasn't going to take that much of a beating and then lose, or else he just looked terrible. Like, in New Japan, there's way more of a chance that he would, in my opinion, that he would lose.
Yeah.
Than in the WWE. You know, and I don't know if it's necessarily good or bad, but they definitely... It's a different presentation to me that has become more obvious with watching both products more consistently.
Right. Yeah, no, I don't think you're necessarily wrong. No, actually, I think you're... you know, I said that you're right, yeah. In New Japan, you know, an injury will more likely, you know, play into a finish and play into, you know, who wins a match. I mean, there are definitely guys, you know, who are, you know, big submission guys who will who will you know, target an injury, and they'll go after the injury, and in the end they will win by targeting the injury.
No.
More than in WWE. I mean, I think one of my, but you know, inside the match, though,
uh-huh.
I'm getting to a point where it's like, we take guys like Rollins and Ricochet and Ospreay and Ibushi. If their comebacks and their offense relies, you know, so much on high impact, high flying moves, then let's just stop doing work over the body part heat segments with them. if they have to choose between, you know, doing less to sell the injury or ignoring an injury in order to, you know, do their usual match.
Yeah, and
that
I
was
mean,
something that coming out of this weekend, watching matches with all the guys I mentioned. You know, it really hit me. It's like, let's find new ways to get heat on these matches and to build the babyface comeback.
Yeah, that would be pretty interesting. I suppose it is something that could come about with a more all around offense in some regards. You know, not just working on a body part or working on several body parts. You could even do, like, there really isn't a rule against that, but it really does seem to be a pretty steadfast wrestling thing, no matter which continent you happen to be wrestling on. And obviously it makes a good deal of sense, but like you said, things are just different now, so there could be a way to, you know, not sell a specific injury so that they can. Because, yeah, I do think there are a lot of occasions, especially with the guys that you listed, where they do such acrobatic stuff, it's almost like no matter what gets injured, it should be a problem. You know, because if it isn't the leg they are actually hitting with, it's just like, well, the plant leg really is the worst one to injure, and that's usually the one that gets worked over. And, you know, just having an arm that is not working, even for some of those aerial moves, you throw them differently if your arm were injured than if it weren't.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I guess there was that, and I'm trying to think of of what the other point was. Oh, my other point, and I touched on it a little bit on the call, and I guess I wanted to get the almost live, definitely half-assed review of Raw there. Your view on Brock Lesnar possibly being the only guy that the no automatic rematch clause is going to come in quite handy for.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting. I mean, it has to be enforced somehow, and it wouldn't surprise me if Brock, you know, if come October Brock ends up on SmackDown more often than Raw. So you know, have him going after the WWE Championship, you know, possibly because he's we've mined everything we can do with Brock and the Universal Championship at this point.
I
would say that. I don't know if you agree or not.
Well, especially if you do, and they obviously do want Rollins as champion. Like, you really don't want to go back to that well again. And having Brock Lesnar kind of be this overbearing thing on the brand is probably not the wisest decision. You know, because
right.
You're definitely going to get a loss out of Braun Strowman a lot easier than out of Brock Lesnar.
Right, yeah. I think, you know, Brock's been exclusively Raw this whole time. He's been Universal Champion 3 times now. Yeah, three times now, and one of those reigns was, you know, almost a year and a half long. The first one was almost a year and a half long, so yeah, no, it'd be good to give Brock a change of scenery. Of course, you got the issue if, you know, he shows up on SmackDown, beats Kofi, and then what are you building to? Roman Reigns again?
yeah, I mean,
we laugh, but.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you said Brock going to SmackDown, my head immediately jumped to Roman Reigns. Like, I completely, no offense meant to Kofi, but I completely bypassed him and just thought, well, I mean, he's got to take on Reigns again at some point, right? But, you know, I guess there isn't a whole lot of getting around it, you know? It's one of those things that Lesnar is a guy that the opponent pool for him is even smaller than anyone else, you know, on the active roster, because they're just not going to put him in a squash match. Like, unless somehow someone does something really dumb, like, because honestly, when was, like, I guess I'm thinking that Heath Slater is the last guy to kind of get fed to him, or would I be wrong in saying that?
Yeah. Actually, there was a Brock Lesnar versus Kofi Kingston match years ago.
Oh.
I don't mean years and years and years ago, because then, but...
Oh, during this,
when they,
this
when
run?
They did that, when they did the WWE Network Japan special about, you know, 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh.
And they just needed somebody to feed to Brock for, you know, a less than 5 minute match, so they chose Kofi.
Hey, yeah, I think I remember that now.
Brock went through a weird period where they actually had him doing, like, house shows. Some of those got turned into network specials, and he basically just did 5 minute squash matches. So I guess it's not as long ago as you would think.
It's still been a minute. I guess it's been a few years at least since he's done that. But I don't think we're going to see it again, though. Like, that was still, I don't know if they want to say, because he did kind of lose a few matches right after he came back, if memory is serving me.
Oh, yes. The losses to John Cena and Triple H that really never should have happened, but...
Yeah.
Hey, he's got to be humbled, you know.
Yeah, he left. He's got to take a couple on the back before he can... But, I mean, you know, he's had a pretty good run for 4 years, I would say.
Five plus.
Oh, okay.
You started with the streak.
Yeah, it's been a long time since those John Cena Triple H days.
That feels like they didn't happen. Like nothing before Brock ending the streak matters at all.
Oh,
in Brock Lesnar canon.
Yeah, agreed. So yeah, it does seem like the better option. I would think that, you know, I guess it will be interesting to see. I feel like there's been a little less in general flip-flopping between the brands. I mean, I know that the Revival was on SmackDown tonight, but I don't. Either that, or they're just not mentioning it. But I do feel like they're kind of trying to settle the rosters a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, yeah, Elias was on Raw last night, and then the Revival. But yeah, other than that, no, there wasn't much. You know, amazingly, tonight was the first time Roman Reigns has been on TV all week.
Yeah.
I still can't believe they didn't end up giving him a match at SummerSlam. That's crazy.
yeah, that was pretty shocking. Like,
and he was all over the opening video too. That was the funny part. They must have thought, you know, that you know, there was just no way they could really put him in a, when they went the route that they're going with this with this mystery attacker angle. There was no way they could pay that off by SummerSlam because it only just started.
I mean, I think it worked out.
SummerSlam. Yeah, no, it's fine.
Because SummerSlam was good for the most part.
Good and only 3.5 hours long.
Oh. Yeah, I kind of...
by 10:30 Eastern, that felt amazing.
That was pretty nice. And I mean, I don't like, there wasn't any match that I was like, oh man, they really got shorted. You know, everything felt like a good length. Because I mean, even to go back to Lesnar and Rollins, like, I guess I'm never really gonna expect an Iron Man match out of Brock Lesnar. You know, if you get 15 minutes out of a Brock Lesnar match, that's a 30-minute regular person match.
Right, yeah. And in general, I believe that there wasn't even a match from SummerSlam that hit 20 minutes. And you know what? Great!
Oh, yeah, I mean, and I do feel like, kind of talking about Absolute Intense Wrestling, just in a time comparison kind of a way, like, you know, no match seems to be longer than any other match. So, like, you know, there's beginning, middle, end, and you kind of keep on moving. So, like, when you kind of have shorter matches, like, the flow of everything works a little bit better for you, I think. You know, and it just feels like it's moving along more. When you do have one long match like that, while it can be great, it really does kind of change the mood of the pay-per-view, you know, cause you start to feel the time. If all the matches are under 20, like, you're kind of moving along at a brisk pace there. Because I know that not all of them were 20 minutes either.
Right. No. I like SummerSlam a lot. I like the pacing of the show. They got that one right. The only thing that you could argue they got wrong was putting Goldberg on so early, making people, you know, making the fans hit their climax so early in the show. It definitely affected the next at least two matches that followed it.
It's one of those things that it was a well played match.
Definitely.
For what it was, but it's still like one of those things I'm like, I guess it's still shocking to me that people react to it that way. You know, I guess I'm one of those guys that I'm like, I guess I don't care if Goldberg is here. But that crowd, like you said, they went bananas, and it affected the next couple of matches. I'm just like, oh, man. I guess I just didn't care about an ass-kicking of Dolph Ziggler, since that happens on a weekly basis anyway.
Right.
And I'm trying to think, what were the next two matches after that?
Next two, I know one of them was Bayley and Ember Moon. That really, honestly, I think that ended up being kind of the weakest match of the show.
They never
really got out of second gear, and it didn't feel like they meshed well at all.
I liked Ember's match with Charlotte on SmackDown tonight way more than I liked the Bayley match. And, you know, I guess I don't think either of them are bad workers, but yeah, something just didn't jive right with that matchup for whatever reason.
And the other match that was kind of affected was AJ Styles and Ricochet. Yeah, which came right after and didn't get great. It's a good match, but Styles and Ricochet still haven't had that great match you'd think that they should be capable of, and they've wrestled each other a lot in the last couple of months.
Oh, yeah, I guess I was kind of, that might be the one, disappointing would be a wrong word to use, but maybe didn't quite live up to expectation. Like, they'd done such, like you said, they kind of had a combination of matches. You know that they weren't kind of going full gear with any of them. So you kind of always expect a little bit more out of a pay-per-view match. And I don't feel like I got it. Like, I kind of feel like I got their Raw version of the match. Which, you know, again, wasn't bad, but wasn't quite what I was expecting to have happen. Although I do like that the club continues to establish themselves. It's going to come at the price of some bigger names, and I hope they kind of keep on going with it. But of course, I don't think AJ's going to win the Universal title, though.
So, as I said, it actually looks like they're going to pivot. I know next week's Raw is supposed to be AJ versus Braun for the U.S. title, one-on-one. Which is almost sure, you know, to end in, you know, a schmoz. Which not almost. It's a sure to end in a schmoz. But it does look like they're going to pivot towards, you know, as I said earlier, Seth and Braun, and then maybe, I don't know, maybe AJ and Ricochet continues. Although I don't really see how you know, if Brock can't get his rematch, I don't see how Ricochet can be justified another U.S. title match after being beaten fairly decisively at SummerSlam with, you know, a minimum amount of interference, because they never really did touch him. They just distracted him.
Oh, yeah, it was not a major bout of interference for sure. I guess this is the other aspect with Brock Lesnar, is that he can't pull off the that we've been kind of harping on, is that people end up winning the rematch anyway through other means here recently. Ricochet can still win some type of a matchup, but it does seem pretty crazy having them wrestle three times within recent memory. Well, what would be a fourth time would be pretty... It start to border on a lot, which did... It was killing me that Rey Mysterio and Andrade was on TV again in a best 2 out of 3 falls match. I feel like I joked about this being a matchup I could watch every week. And the WWE seems kind of hell-bent on delivering it every week on TV.
And with the same result every week. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad to see that they're pushing Andrade. But, man, does not feel like they're, valuing Rey Mysterio, too highly. After the loss, it's almost like it sounded like they're gonna do a raise go Rey Mysterio is going broke storyline. that never works. It evokes memories of the Shawn Michaels, sells himself to JBL storyline that just did not work. That no one could possibly believe that.
Oh, and
he's gone.
I guess I immediately started thinking about the Big Show and his money problems.
Oh yeah, that one too. That was another one.
I forgot about the Shawn Michaels one completely. Yeah, they haven't worked in the past. I don't think they're going to work now. No one. It does not help that I don't believe that Rey Mysterio's broke. I know that they're playing parts and all, but this is a little bit of a stretch, to say the least. I mean, he still is gainfully employed.
Right.
And I guess even kind of speaking of gainfully employed, are you at all concerned about Kevin Owens' $100,000 fine? And his financial viability moving forward?
Yeah, you know what? I guess $100,000 is still a lot of money to just about anyone. I wouldn't. Maybe they had Kevin Owens overreact to it a little too much, based on what, people would assume that he makes a year. People typically would assume that he makes $1 million a year. What's $100,000? But I guess if you were fined 10% of your annual income, would that hurt?
I mean, I think that would be pretty infuriating to just about anyone, honestly. Like,
yeah.
Even if it was less than 10%, especially when, other special guest referees have never gotten such a courtesy fine, and it is like one of those things that I'm just like, okay, this seems like a good time to get Shane off TV. It'd be great. And then we just got a lot of Shane.
Yeah, we've definitely got... Yeah. shame.
That was the only thing that really...
It really, you know, before SmackDown could have a new era, Shane is gonna have to go by you know, the time they get to Fox.
Yeah, that was the one thing. Like, in general, I liked SmackDown a lot tonight. But that segment was one that I'm just like, oh my god. And then he gets more segments, and I'm just sitting there going, oh, come on, guys. Like, you're killing me here.
But they have, for the last month, taken Shane off of Raw.
Oh.
And Raw has essentially been running just fine without an on-screen authority figure.
this is true.
So hopefully they're learning lessons from that.
yeah, especially, and I mean, that was the other thing that was kind of annoying about the whole situation is that Shane really hasn't pulled out the authority figure card recently, you know, meaning the last, like, what has it been, like 8 months that he's been a full-time wrestler?
Yeah. But no. I mean, he's been making his own matches and putting his enemies in unfair situations. Yeah, you know, he really has the whole time, whether it was Miz or Roman or now Kevin Owens.
Well, yeah, I don't know why I felt differently about tonight. Because I guess he has only really directed things within his direct purview. Like, he hasn't affected the rest of the show. You know what I mean? Like, he hasn't made a women's matchup for any random reason. Like, it's
whoever he's feuding with. They do mention that they went to Shane McMahon and got their match approved. Or, you know, there's at least some mention of him as the grand authority figure on at least on SmackDown.
You're right.
It's been too much of him this whole year, which kind of sucks because, you know, up to this year, I thought in the heel turn, I thought that, you know, they were using Shane, you know, right and pretty consistently, especially while he was a babyface authority figure, but now no, it's been months and months of just Shane just being, you know, just an overbearing presence on both shows, and now it's just consolidated on SmackDown. But and Shane can be a good performer, but it's just been way too much of him, and he needs to go away for a long time. And, you know, maybe they do need to try out, you know, both shows, not having an authority figure that's on screen. If something's important enough, you can wheel out Vince or Triple H to, you know, to announce it, but not as an every week thing.
Agreed. Yeah, it's something that, because I feel like Heyman has mentioned that it's outdated. Bischoff supposedly with more influence on the SmackDown brand, if I'm correct, might not feel that way, but I hope that he does. So, you know, we shall see, in that regard, but, it seemed like a good time to cut him off, especially with the storyline being what it was. Unfortunately, we're getting at least another couple of months of or at least another month of Shane before anything happens, I would imagine. I'm trying to think of what else I have not hit on either show that stood out to me. What say you?
Well, we had quite the major return last night on Raw.
Oh, wow. How did I forget that one? 40 minutes deep, and we finally pull this one out. Sasha Banks makes her return This, if I'm not mistaken, she has years, plural, left on her contract, correct?
Correct, she does.
To me, it kind of felt inevitable that she would come back at some juncture with multiple years on left on her contract. It seems like a good time to bring her back.
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, let's make that's not mince words. Becky was stuck with it with Natalya at SummerSlam. and after she beat Natalya, there's not much left. Actually, there's essentially nothing left. So, yeah. Sasha needed to come back. Yeah. Becky's title reign really... maybe this is hyperbole, but maybe not much of it. Becky's title reign needs Sasha Banks right now.
Yeah. Yeah, because not too surprisingly, Becky's kind of fallen into the similar, although I don't think she's had as hard of a time since winning at WrestleMania is her boyfriend Seth Rollins. But I don't think that storyline helped either of them, the whole pushing of them as dating.
No, it did not. No. That was the... It is a toss-up whether that or the Corbin feud was more responsible for Seth's downfall. It didn't hurt Becky as much, but it's still, you know, it still felt like a waste for her. I mean, yeah. Lacey Evans did her best, but you know she just simply wasn't ready for that spot,
and
they've really not done a good job building really anyone else up, and we've got this situation where, yes, the horsewomen are, you know, head and shoulders above everyone else, and you'd strongly argue that, you know, obviously Becky and Charlotte are considerably above Sasha and Bayley. You know, so in many ways, I mean, obviously Sasha could have just decided to keep sitting out, but for WWE side of things, that there really wasn't much of another option.
No. For as good of a roster as the WWE has for the women, and I was thinking about it more about the tag teams last night, but... they've still just done a piss poor job of developing the people underneath, you know. I guess we've talked more about the women's tag team championships being completely absent, but the women's singles division hasn't been done any favors really at all. And I'm going to say these words, and I don't normally expect to say them, but, you know, the Bellas are definitely missed at a time like this. They would have been easy to throw in to either championship reign, whether it be Bayley or Becky Lynch.
Yeah, no. I mean, and really any act that's, you know, been, you know, super over throughout the years, yeah, absolutely, because they just have done a bad job this year. I mean, they put all their eggs in the Becky Lynch Charlotte Flair basket, and once you know they did that match between the two of them to death, and especially once Ronda was out of the picture, you know they weren't left with much. I mean, so it's good to have. It's definitely good to have Sasha back. They did it. I mean, I think that they were expecting, because they had Natalya out there in Canada crying about her dad again, that Sasha was going to be booed. But yeah, that just wasn't happening.
Obviously a lot of fans were waiting for her to be back. I mean, I did think it was telling ahead of time that there was kind of the somewhat viral, definitely in the wrestling Twitter world, of Becky Lynch shit-talking Sasha Banks before SummerSlam. And then didn't she have an interview that was titled I Said What I Said or something like that? And I guess I was assuming she was doubling down on making fun of Sasha. It kind of seemed like there were seeds for a feud there before SummerSlam even happened.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? You know, people were saying that Sasha has, you know, spent the last 2 months, you know, on Twitter and Instagram, putting up, you know, starting from beginning to end of a Kendrick Lamar song lyrics, that and the countdown literally ended of the last handful of lyrics on Monday. So who knows? You know, maybe they've had this planned out for a while, that Sasha would continue, you know, on her sabbatical, and that she would return the night after SummerSlam. You know, that this has been this has, you know, possibly been in the works for quite a while.
Oh yeah, and I always felt like there might be something like that up. Like at some point, I'm like, how have they not resolved whatever the problem is, because yeah, that just seems like too big of an impasse, or too small of an impasse. You know, she kind of made her point. I think some people leaving already, including Dean Ambrose slash John Moxley. And really, even the Revival, I believe they're still without contract. You know, I think there's still enough people there that maybe are giving the WWE a little bit of pause about how they're handling some of their talent. But I do think, I guess, ultimately, and you even referenced it in the way you worded it, that Becky Lynch's title reign needs Sasha Banks. I guess I still see Becky winning this at the end of the day.
I do too, but I would see them possibly trading the title, you know, back and forth more.
Okay.
I do think that they're still going to be, you know, more in the Becky Lynch business.
Are we going to be continuing the business of Sasha Banks never having successfully defended a championship?
Well, that's a good question.
Because that is something that, if they are going to have her for years, plural, like, Vince has been so petty about some things over the years, and to me, that just screams one of those moments where he'd be petty and just have her lose in a first title defense again. It's just like, man, you're just not going to keep her all that viable if, you know, if that is a real statistic. You know, it's just not a good thing. It's not a good look. You know, you can have that in the UFC and still be looked at as the good champion in some divisions, but in the WWE world, that's a terrible look, not being able to have at least a long-ish title reign.
Yeah. No. I agree. So, who knows? Maybe Sasha will get to beat Becky and then have at least a decent length run before losing it back or losing it to someone else. Yeah, who knows? I mean, I'm just glad that Sasha's back and she's a heel. I think that, you know, there was on a Twitter timeline today, there was quite a bit of reminiscing of the you know, Sasha Banks, you know initial, you know, her big you know, NXT run as the boss, as a heel, you know, during that time period, you know, from the time she beat Charlotte for the women's title, NXT title, through the through, you know, losing to Bayley, and then, you know, and that version of Sasha Banks being, without a doubt, the best version of Sasha Banks. And if she can tap back into that again, because she's pretty much been a babyface most of her main roster run. I mean, she started as a heel, but she was turned babyface, you know, fairly quickly, and never turned back, but, you know, which is weird, because, you know, she was such an effective heel.
Yeah, and it was one of those things where, everyone was chanting for the boss, and the main roster just made her a babyface. You know, or, no, they were chanting Sasha Banks way back, just at that point. But, you know, I think they heard all the cheers, and they're like, well, we got to make her a babyface, but... It, you know, it kind of goes back to what we've been talking about. The heelish tendencies tend to make people far more popular these days. And Banks kind of lost her character just in general. Like, I know that we've talked a lot about her and Bayley not really ever getting to establish their characters. And I felt like they were coming around a little bit as characters in the tag team. And I still agree with Sasha. Like, that was still a terrible idea for them to lose the tag team titles. As, thankfully, weirdly, Sasha Banks and Nikki Cross might be able to reignite
Alexa,
that division.
You mean Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross?
Who did I just say?
You said Sasha Banks.
Ah.
Okay. But yeah, no. I understand what you meant. But yeah, no. I think, you know what, it's good for, you know what, if, you know, they were, you know, souring on the Iconics from pretty much the moment that they won the titles, they're not going to sour on Alexa Bliss at all. So, she's guaranteed to be on TV every week. So, let's run with her and Nikki Cross for a while. I am absolutely fine with that. And as long, you know, if Sasha and Bayley are both in their respective women's title mixes going forward, then maybe in the end everything will have worked out just fine.
Yeah. It is kind of interesting that is almost a men's division tag team, and I didn't completely think about it. You know, have one famous and one not famous person tag up to go for the tag team championships. Bliss do a great job, and Nikki's been an awesome sidekick so far.
Yeah, no. Their act's pretty good right now, and you know, yeah, it's good to have them the tag team as the women's tag team champions. They, you know, they've already defended the belts more than the Iconics did, or excuse me, as many times as the Iconics did within 24 hours.
Oh, man. That was not my favorite of the evening. Just simply because I'm like, this seems like this can be a feud and not just a title defense the next day. Like, you just had two local talents lose to the Viking Experience. Are they the Viking Raiders now?
Viking Raiders, yes.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that the Viking Experience is just their finishing maneuver. It seemed like the Kabuki Warriors could be a feud for them instead of a following night victory.
Yeah, but it just doesn't feel like, once again... Someone just doesn't get Asuka. I'm pretty sure we know who that someone has to be.
Yeah, I don't think he gets Kyrie sane either.
Well, yeah, no.
You know, when you want ultimate underdog, babyface, female, and you put her in a team with Big Bad Asuka, you're getting a little confused. I mean, and they haven't really done a good job of playing up Big Dog, Little Dog in that situation either. But, of course, they've just done a piss-poor job with the Kabuki Warriors also in general. So I guess this is not completely surprising. Because I just was doing another quick scan through the column, and yeah, I don't know if there's anything else to cover. Is there something else from SmackDown to cover?
Well, I guess they can. We mentioned it, but I guess we never really went deep into it. The continuing saga of is Roman Reigns' mystery attacker?
Well, we did get one hell of a match out of it.
Yes, we did. Wow, that was a hell of a star-making deal there for old Buddy Murphy.
Well, I was amused because I believe I've admitted a number of times I do not watch 205 a lot. I did see a lot of people reference the fact that, like, oh, I don't know how Buddy Murphy is 205. And I kind of got a good laugh out of some of our friends mentioning that. And then one of the first things out of Tom Phillips' mouth is, Buddy Murphy isn't adhering to the 205 Live policy anymore. In his matchup with Roman Reigns. I mean, he did end up saying that he still was at quite a size disadvantage against Reigns, because Reigns is a very large human being.
Right, yes, he is. Yeah.
But I kind of got a kick out of that, because I guess I've been a little bit surprised. Him and fellow 205 Live call-up Cedric Alexander, I was kind of wondering if Alexander would put back on some of his weight that he had in Ring of Honor. Obviously, he probably doesn't want to be like the 230-something that was in Ring of Honor. But, you know, I would think that if he put on an extra 10 pounds or something, it might help him out on the main roster. Because, yeah, Buddy Murphy looks... Well, he reminds me a bit physique-wise of Neville.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I definitely see that comparison.
So, yeah, I mean, you could tell me he's 205, or you could tell me he's 215, and I wouldn't be shocked, because they were both, or both are built like brick shithouses. So, good on them. And, yeah, Murphy was, again, since I don't watch 205 Live, I did see a lot of compliments of his work. And, yeah, you could definitely see it. I mean, that could have been one of the better matches all week, honestly. And yeah. It was just on SmackDown. It's a little bit of a throwaway in the whodunit saga, since Murphy implicated... Rowan, who then denied it, or at least Daniel Bryan denied it for him.
Yeah. Daniel, then they beat down Buddy Murphy, and now they're promising to reveal that they know who the real attacker is next week. So once again, this is, you know, it's a good mystery story. They're, you know, unveiling out, unveiling, you know, different bits and pieces and clues, you know, every week. No, it's very well done. Although one thing I did notice this week, whatever they were doing last week as far as regarding, you know, teasing a potential babyface turn for Samoa Joe, they certainly walked that back this week.
Oh. Yeah. Samoa Joe was...
Plans change.
was full on healing it up this week, which I'm not surprised. He kind of works better in that mode. Honestly, yeah. He's kind of so cool. I'm surprised that the fans haven't cheered him much. But I did kind of have to laugh that on Raw, you know, of course Canada was cheering him, and he had to scold them to get them to boo.
Yeah.
I mean, I did get a little bit of a hoot out of that. So, so was he on both shows too?
Yes, the Mojo was on both shows, yes. He was okay. The one who was on both shows this week, yes.
Back to the whodunit. It does seem like Joe is completely off the list, it would seem, because the one drive-by happened while he was there. I guess it still leaves Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan as possible culprits. Just because they're promising to bring the person doesn't mean it's going to be someone else. But, again, there's kind of a limited number of people to me that would be interesting surprises, unless there's been some word on the street about who this probably is that I have not heard.
No. I think the original idea was it was supposed to actually be Brian and Rowan, but it seems like maybe they're going to go in a different direction. I didn't totally get the whole part about Daniel Bryan where he was demanding an apology when I don't believe we've got enough evidence. Was any evidence presented by them, actual evidence presented by them to say that it absolutely wasn't them?
Well, that's why I kind of implicated them right away with my first statement, is that earlier in the night they mentioned that they that because Reigns had held Buddy Murphy at fist point or whatever he was calling it, that, you know, Murphy was liable to say anything because he can be a liar, but then they went and did the exact same thing to get an apology later in the evening. You know, they had to, so, you know, because Murphy did not seem like he was ready to apologize, because I think he wasn't going to apologize because he knows he's right. You know, I that's just my hunch, is because, yeah. I mean, Daniel Bryan and his guardian, Eric Rowan, have not had matches with Roman Reigns, so it makes a good deal of sense to make this match up for everyone involved.
Yeah, it does look like they're going to maybe run with Buddy Murphy is Roman Reigns' tag team partner, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because Roman looked at Buddy with enough, you know, with enough, you know, of respect and not of approval after the match was over.
Yeah, I agree that I was almost expecting a tag team match tonight in some ways, or for Roman Reigns to come in and make the save when Buddy Murphy was getting the hell beaten out of him in the locker room. But poor Buddy had to take that one on the proverbial chin. Because I guess I don't really know who else you bring to the table to take on Reigns if it isn't one of the two of them that perpetrated the event. You know, I guess it'd be kind of interesting to see who they did bring in. But, yeah, I'm all for, again, for it to be Brian and Rowan. They seem hypocritical enough. I don't want to see The Fiend against Roman Reigns. Hard pass on that one. That's another matchup that we've seen enough of, even if Bray Wyatt has been off TV for the better part of a year. Yeah. So I think Roman Reigns' mystery attacker about wraps things up. So, Bell Time Beer, still on my Georgia kick. This one's from Athens, Georgia. Creature Comforts Brewing Company. Tropicalia, India Pale Ale. It has quite a grapefruity slash orangey taste to it, and I approve quite a bit. This it's a good IPA, and I don't know how far they distribute, but if you happen to be down in Georgia and you find it in a six pack shop, I say go for it. So yeah, that's my advice for the end of the evening. So I'm at DeFrango11. He's at are you Stunt Cali now?
Yes, at Stunt Cali now, yes.
the brand is that Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.
Later.